Well, good evening, everyone. This is Pam Stack. I'm your host. Happy Primetime Wednesday. You're listening to Authors on the Air. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. I haven't been on the radio since last week. It's really fun to have a couple nights off. We had a delightful podcast with Libby Fisher-Hellman and Kent Kruger on Monday night from the Chicago Library System, where, you know, we are celebrating we're kind of halfway through National Library Month. But tonight, live here in the studios, I have the opportunity to speak to two gentlemen who I'm very fond of and I'm getting to know better and better as time goes by, particularly because they're two of my favorite crime fiction writers. We're kicking off the night with stories about noir crime fiction and about some very different writing styles and writing forms and formats. So first up with me tonight is my friend Steve Loudon, who you know has been on this show for doing Flash Fiction. He's been on the show talking about his prior book called Bad Citizen Corporation, which I adored that book. His new book is out now called Crosswise, and Steve is here to talk to us about that and the sequel to Bad Citizen Corporation. Hey, Steve, welcome back to Authors on the Air.
Thanks so much for having me, Pam. I'm thrilled.
I'm glad you're here. You know, I loved Crosswise. Thank you for sending me the galley on that. I love reading your work. It's really compact, straight to the point. I really love your storytelling capabilities. Congratulations on your success, not only with this one, but Bad Citizen Corporation, which was my introduction to you. How's everything?
It's good. I'm definitely staying busy, but thank you for the kind words about the books. You know, it's you write something like that, you think about it, if you're me, for a lot of years, and you tell yourself you can or can't do it, and you start and you stop and you throw things out. And then to actually publish it and to get a warm reception from people like yourself and people who've read my books, it's pretty thrilling. So I appreciate the kind words and for having me on tonight.
Oh, I'm thrilled that you're here. I always like it when you come on. I should let everybody know that you are also the #1 production assistant for Noir on the Radio when you were at Left Coast Crime, because nobody has your technical skills that could have set up that show any better. So thank you for doing that. If you've missed Steve and Michael Poole from Left Coast Crime, I'll go ahead and post the podcast, not only here on my Facebook page, but on Office on the Air and the Noir on the Air. You can go back and listen to it. They had quite a lineup that night. Did you have a good time at Left Coast?
Oh, yeah, I had a blast. You know, I'm fairly new to the mystery and crime conventions, but I've been to BafterCon twice, and I've been to Left Coast Crime twice. And I had a really good time in Phoenix, particularly that night. The lineup that Michael Poole put together for the Noir on the Radio that night, got to know Krista Wilt and got to know Brian Thornton from Seattle, among others. Sarah Chen read a really fantastic story. So it was a really good group of people. And then I actually went on to do a couple of little blog interviews and projects with Brian Thornton out of Seattle, talking about music and fiction and how we interweave it into our stories and if we listen to it when we write. So, you know, it did exactly what you want from one of those conventions, which is let you network with interesting people who have similar goals that you do.
Cool. Before we talk about your books, I want to talk about your blog too. If you've never read Steve's blog, he's really terrific. I want you to write down this website, and I'll post it on my pages too. BadCitizenCorporation.com is Steve's blog, and he calls it Interrogation. And how often are you posting one of these? It seems like, you know, every few days you're putting a new one up.
Yeah, I think it's because I repost them throughout the week. But I started it just after the BafterCon in Long Beach, and I do it every Monday. So I do a new interview/interrogation with an indie crime or mystery writer or publisher every Monday. And I guess I've been doing that for about a year and a half now.
Yeah, I want listeners to know, if you have not gone and read some of these in the, it's a blog, but he calls them interrogation. They're really, really a lot of fun, really well put together. I wish, Steve, you were my web guru because, man, you do some good stuff. And yours truly got interviewed after, was it before? I think it was before BoucherCon, wasn't it? It was before BoucherCon last year.
That's right,
so, yeah, Steve did a really great interview with me. I was impressed that he asked because I'm not really I'm not a writer or a publisher. I just like to talk to people on the radio. But I appreciated it. Thank you. Everybody in the network writes books except for me. I just read a whole bunch of them, Steve. So don't tell anyone, okay? All the other
hosts.
Yeah,
you're the one we're all trying to reach. I mean, that's the idea, right? It's like
okay.
I started out originally. The idea was, you know, I wanted to get to know people and start finding out how other writers are approaching this. But as I went along, I also got interested in finding out how publishers look at things. People like yourself who are really involved in the publishing community, the reading community, you know a lot of writers. I want to have a well-rounded experience. Like this week, I actually interviewed John Jordan from Crime Spree magazine.
Right.
And
John and Ruth.
The point of that was he posted a thing on Facebook saying that he was going to be co-producing the programming for BoucherCon in New Orleans this year.
In New Orleans,
and
right.
He wanted to know if anybody had any suggestions. And it created this really sort of lively debate and made me start thinking, like, you know, I have my view of it as an author who's hungry to get myself and my writing out in front of people and to get my books read. But what's the perspective of a reader who's going to that conference? And certainly what's the perspective of the person who's putting those panels together? And it's a pretty fascinating interview just because he's programmed the panels at BoucherCon, but also for Murder and Mayhem, which is his conference in Milwaukee.
His conference, right. He's a great guy. The Crime Street magazine is wonderful. His posts are hysterical. I like him because he's a cat guy. You know, I'm a cat girl, so all those things are good. I'm counting on you to set up Nora on the Radio BoucherCon this year in Orleans. So that's going to be a lot of fun. And I think we'll get with it with Tom Pitts and a couple other people, and we'll find out who we want to interview. And, you know, I think you and I will have a good time with that, don't you?
Oh, I'm really looking forward to it. It's like you get people in a room like that with some microphones and some cameras, and it starts to be a really good time.
Yeah, it really does. And this time I'm bringing more microphones and I'm bringing table microphones, so it'll be a lot better. And we're going to not be in a basement having to try to catch a Wi-Fi signal, which was one of
just
the problems.
As close to the bar as possible, Pam, just as close to the bar as we can get.
We can't because the noise coming out of there. Remember how stunned the bar manager was? He couldn't believe it. He said, I can't believe all these people are writers. And I said, what, you thought they were going to be really quiet and whispering to each other? I said, never have I been to an author conference, a writer conference, where it's quiet and the bar is where everybody meets. So it's tons of fun, though. I'm looking forward to New Orleans. I've never been there, so it should be a good time. You know, with the usual crowd that we're hanging out with, it should be a lot of fun. So let's talk books. Bad Citizen Corporation was really an interesting book to me because your lead character had so many facets of his personality. And just he was a cop, but he's a former rock idol, a punk rock idol. And, you know, he's kind of gotten himself twisted up with a bad shoot while he's on duty and all. And it was a really interesting, to me, character study of this one character, this one particular man. I know we talked about Bad Citizen before. I'm not going to replay that. So I want to skip now to Crosswise, which is a totally new book on a different theme. If you would, please give everybody an idea about the book. I mean, give them, you can give them the 25-cent tour, if you would, and tell them about the pitch on that one.
Yeah, sure. The book is about a disgraced New York City police officer named Tommy Russo, who falls in with a sort of coke-addicted woman from Florida, and she, over the course of their affair in New York, starts telling him to steal cocaine from the evidence locker. obviously there's no good way for that story to end. He loses his badge. She convinces him to come back to Florida. He gets a job at the only job he can get now that he's a disgraced cop. He gets a job as a security guard at a retirement community called Precious Acres. And the retirement community is full of sort of wisecracking mafioso type retirees. As soon as he gets the job and now he's a security guard at a retirement community, she splits. And he's kind of, now he's in Florida. He doesn't know anybody. And he's walking across the retirement community after she leaves him and finds the first of several dead bodies on the bocce ball court. And everything I just told you happens in the first page of the book.
It was really a fascinating book. Again, thank you for sending me the first look at it. I love all the characters in this book. But boy, this guy can't get out of his own way, can he?
No, you know, I mean, he's got a lot of the usual problems that these characters in these crime and mystery novels tend to have with his drinking and his ego and his chasing women. And, you know, he's a short guy and he's got a little bit of a complex about that. And so he's always kind of ready to throw a punch. You know, but it's one of the things that I was trying to do with this story. You know, when I wrote Bad Citizen Corporation, I was writing a lot about parts of my life that I had lived that had been, you know, completely twisted up and fictionalized. It's by no means an autobiography, but it was based in Southern California around the punk scene that I grew up in. There was a specific tone I was trying to achieve. I was trying to match the sort of angry energy of the punk music I grew up listening in my approach to writing that story. When I wrote Crosswise, I was really trying to write sort of a kind of campy, funny romp. So the characters are a little bit more over the top, and I got to have a little bit more fun and sort of stretch myself a little bit in a way that I wasn't doing with Greg Salem in the Bad Citizen Corporation story.
Right. Well, I find it interesting, though, that both of your when you write noir crime fiction, it's hard to say they're protagonists but your lead characters are both cops. Is that significant of anything?
You know, the last person who said that to me was my wife. She proofread Crosswise, and after she read it, she gave me back a lot of notes. And one of the things she said to me was, "I never knew you had such a thing for cops." I didn't realize that I had such a thing for cops. And you know, outside of Bad Citizen Corporation and Crosswise, which are my two longest stories that I've written, a book and a novella. I don't write about cops in any of the short fiction I've published. I think maybe it's an easy shorthand, you know, it's an easy, quick way to put a gun in somebody's hand and make them resourceful and make them trained to get into strange situations and fight their way out. It's not something that I intended to do. It's just something that I just sort of fell into doing as I was rounding out the characters.
Well, this character in Crosswise, Russo in Crosswise, he is a little bit more to me. I understand him a little bit better. He's, you know, when you think of disgraced cops, that's him. And then coming down to the retirement in Florida, here where I live, you know, I can imagine him at one of these retirement centers up in, you know, Sarasota or someplace else, or he'd probably even here, I don't know. But and certainly in Miami Beach, I can imagine him there. Salem in Bad Citizen Corporation was, and I think so different from any cop character that I've ever read. Because making the leap from drug-addled band member, punk rocker, golden boy, surfer, to cop surfer with the former life that he had and all this kind of stuff, and still making these, you know, appearances after X amount of years, that's a character that you don't see that often. The dichotomy in that character is pretty distinct.
Yeah, that was. Well, I'm glad you took that all in, because it does seem pretty complicated hearing somebody else explain it. But it's, I got to tell you that, like, that juxtaposition is really what interested me. Like, I knew I wanted to write a story, a mystery, a crime novel set along the beach in Southern California, because, like, I really like juxtaposition as a writer, and I like it a lot
sure.
as a reader. But so, you know, this sort of sunshine noir feel where you're at the beach and the sun's beating down, but all these really dark things are happening. And I love that juxtaposition, and I wanted to weave in the punk rock angle. And the story in a lot of ways is about how the beach communities have changed and how they used to allow for these kinds of characters. And these days, the coast along Southern California is understandably very moneyed, and it's very expensive to live there. So from my view, it's changed quite a lot. But Greg Salem becomes this sort of the key juxtaposition with him is, yes, he's a cop, and he became a cop to solve the overarching mystery of his brother's death. But he never self-identifies as a cop. In his head, he's always the skateboarding punk rock singer, and that's the reason why he's a police officer in a place that is geographically very removed from his life along the beach. Was sort of like, once I put that together, I knew that I had something that I was interested in writing.
Well, it's a very fascinating thing to me that you do his 12-step program when they're all sitting on boards out in the ocean. I love that. That was really fun to read that. Because at first I'm saying, what the hell are they doing? And then, you know, I'm reading on and I thought, okay, this is really cool. It's not something you would imagine, but I think he's in denial, or he's not even in denial. I think he doesn't recognize that he has two completely separate halves of himself. You know, it's a really interesting story. Yeah, it's a really interesting, really interesting character story. I like it very much, by the way. You said to me earlier that you are in the process of writing a sequel to Bad Citizen Corporation. By the way, please tell everyone what Bad Citizen Corporation is, just so we clear that up. It's not a mini mob group or anything like that. It's not the mob wannabes.
Bad Citizen Corporation is the name of Greg Salem's old punk rock band in the first novel. And I did actually write and hand in the sequel, the second book in that series. It's called Grizzly Season, and it's with my publisher right now. The interesting thing about Bad Citizen Corporation is that I conceived all three books in the trilogy before I started writing. Like, I had the whole story plotted out, but it would have been way too much of an undertaking to try to write something of that length. And I wasn't interested in doing that, and I didn't think anybody would be interested in reading that in one sitting. So I wrote the first novel, and the complexity of the character, the intent was for it to kind of play out over the course of the entire trilogy. So the characters, without giving anything away, the characters that survived Bad Citizen Corporation all appear again in Grizzly Season. And there's some continuing thread about his punk rock path, his deteriorating, almost completely gone police career by the end of Bad Citizen Corporation. And he encounters some more opportunities to sort of flex his muscle as a PI, or as somebody who's considering becoming a PI as an afterlife to being a police officer.
Interesting. When you sit down to write a story, do you have it in your head first what it is you're going to write? You said you had planned out these three books. Does the story kind of roll through your brain first before you sit down to actually commit it to paper?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I definitely wrote out a very intricate timeline, character studies, and that kind of thing, plots for Bad Citizen Corporation, and to a lesser degree, the two books that follow. And then as I got into the character, I kind of veered off of that to such a degree that I stopped referring to it. But I had sort of guidelines around the character and around where I thought the story was going to go. What
sure.
I discovered in writing Greg Salem was that at a certain point, and I think this is a good thing, but at a certain point, I wasn't really creating the character and writing the character anymore. I was reporting on him. He came to life in my head. And so
oh, cool.
when I was writing things that don't really jive with who the character is, he will just sort of literally stop and, like, you know, just basically fold his arms and shake his head and tell me that I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't go there. I wouldn't hang out with that person. I wouldn't say that. So I'm kind of letting it, I'm letting him dictate now, letting that character dictate to me now how he navigates the guide, this world I've created for him over the course of these three stories. But there is an overarching story that will continue throughout all three books. With Crosswise, I was on vacation in the panhandle of Florida, and, you know, it's really beautiful there, white sand beaches, crystal clear waters, really nice people, great food. And I was really enjoying myself. And as I was walking around with a crime writer sort of mystery mind, I was like, you know, the only thing missing here, this is like the perfect place for a murder because it's such an idyllic, wonderful place. So I decided to start writing a short story there, and that short story was Crosswise, which the main plot driver in Crosswise is that the clues to the murder may or may not be in the daily crossword puzzle from the local newspaper, which is how the name comes about. But I started as a short story, and I got encouragement from a couple of publishers early on and my editor, Elaine Ash, that I should develop it into a longer piece, and that's how we got the novella.
It's a really interesting story. I like it very much. I don't know. This story is not – neither one of your stories are grindingly horrible. You know, they're not – there's not an in-your-face bloody confrontation. It's not – you know – I mean, your characters are hapless is the only way I can explain it. I think Greg Salem is a survivor. I think Frank Russo is a survivor, you know, but you know, you're right that they're never going to be at the top of their game, I don't think. At least not the way you've left them right now. We'll see. You know, but I like that. I mean, I kind of like that. I like the fact that it's kind of an everyday guy who – well, especially with Russo, you know, his fall from grace is not one that's unheard of. I mean, I think it's not common, but it's not unheard of. The character you created with Greg Salem was one that is a little unusual. It's a little offbeat. That's why I thought it was a great character study, you know. So it was really
thank
fun.
Thank you.
What comes after Grizzly Season? Have you titled the third in the trilogy?
I have not, but you know, I do know how that book and the trilogy as a whole ends. So I'm actually kind of excited to sit down and write that. But you know, I'm a writer, and so anytime I sit down to write a project, I get an idea for three more projects. Right now, I've gotten a lot of encouragement around Crosswise, and Eric Campbell at Down and Out Books is definitely encouraging me to write a follow up to Crosswise. So that one may turn into a series as well. But then there's also there's a crime comedy novel that I have in my head that I really, really want to write. And I'm trying to figure out how I can map these things out. So there may be two novels or novellas between now and when I actually write the third book in the Bad Citizen Corporation trilogy.
Interesting. I want to go back to what you were talking about, how you intricately mapped out the books originally, and I was just reading a quote that Jill Lansdale said about, you know, never outline, let it flow from your soul and let it come out. And you just kind of confirmed it to me. When you wrote Crosswise, you did not outline as judiciously as you did the prior book?
I didn't outline at all. I just knew that I had a crossword puzzle hook, and I knew that I had a really fantastic setting, and then I just kind of let the story take off from there.
Do you think you'll continue to outline?
No, I've actually given it up. You know, I think that in reality, outlining for Bad Citizen Corporation, you have to remember I did that almost 6 years ago now when I first tried to convince myself to write it. And I think that that's what I was doing, is I was trying to convince myself, give myself evidence that I had enough information and momentum to give myself the confidence to actually sit down and write the thing. Because I have a trunk novel that I wrote in 2001 that was this sprawling, epic, crazy literary novel that I wrote at sort of the height of a particularly manic period in my life. And I knew what it took out of me to write that. You know, it never saw the light of day, and it never will. but it kind of left a taste in my mouth, one, that I could do it, but two, that it would just about kill me if I tried to do it again.
Right.
I think when I was outlining, I was really trying to convince myself that I could do it. And I think that, that Joe Lansdale's right in that once I got in and I was actually in the characters and I was in the plot and it was rolling along, I was able to let go of sort of those guide rails and the safety net that I created for myself and really take off. And, you know, that's how, like, as an example, Greg Salem in the first book has a sidekick named Marco. He was never in the outline, and he actually didn't come about until after I'd finished the first draft of the novel and realized that I need somebody to be a counterpoint to Greg because Greg can be so self-serious at times. And so that would not have happened if I had been strictly adhering to the outline that I set out for myself.
Let's take a call, okay? Hold on.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, you're live.
Hi. Hey.
You're live.
Excuse me. I'm choking on my own vomit there. Hey, this is Tom Pitts calling in.
Tom Pitts.
How you doing? Listen,
I'm
have
now,
a
buddy.
I have a question because you guys steamrolled right over. I was listening and hoping to find out what was going on with Grizzly Season. And you mentioned that the manuscript is with your publisher, but you've got a few things out with a few different publishers. Who is going to put it out? That's what I want to know. If it's still with Rare Bird or is it perhaps a Down and Out?
Yeah, no, actually all three books for the Bad Citizen Corporation series are contracted for Rare Bird at this point.
Ooh, contracted, locked in. I like that.
Yeah, well, you know, we had a really good experience. Tom, I know that you're familiar with Rare Bird. For people who aren't, Tyson Cornell runs that publishing company. He's a former rock guy. He used to be the marketing director of Book Soup here in L.A., and he runs this really interesting indie publishing company out of Los Angeles that publishes a lot of literary fiction, but also publishes a lot of like nonfiction and anthologies and stuff that are like related to rock and roll and that culture. And both Tom and I, having been in bands before, kind of were aware of Rare Bird in a way that maybe others won't be. But it's a pretty cool publishing house. I'm one of his very few mystery writers, but they publish some really interesting stuff.
Hang on one second, Tom. Let me take another call. Hold on. Let's see who else is calling. This is from a Miami number. Hi, you're live. Who's this?
Hey, it's Alex Segura.
Hey, Alex. How are you? I didn't realize
I'm good.
Was your number.
I'm good.
Good.
I was just waiting in the wings.
You're waiting in the wings. Alex is our next guest. You have any questions for Steve while you're on the line?
No, I thought it was a great interview. I was just honored to get to listen and be backstage.
Okay, stay backstage. I'll talk to you in a bit, okay?
All right.
I knew it was a Miami number. I just didn't think it was Alex calling in. That's so funny.
Get back in the green room there, Segura.
He's back in the green room now. So you wanted to know about Grizzly Season, too, right?
Well, yeah, I think you answered my question because I was curious. Actually, I mean, you know, I do. I love Rare Bird. I like their style. I like their stable, and I like what they do. And I always tell Steve I covet the Rare Bird. But I guess I was asking for a somewhat selfish reason, because Down and Out Books seems to be cornering the market on a lot of the noir and crime writers. And Steve, you have the next big thing for you, and I guess for me too, is right around the corner. You're part of the Unloaded anthology that's coming out next week, right? Or coming out tomorrow?
Oh yeah,
I'm
super thrilled about that.
I got that book too. I can't wait because I'm going to talk to Eric Feeder about it. He's going to come on, and we're going to chat about that. I love that book.
Excellent. Well, I will with that shameless self-promotion and a plug for my publisher, Eric Campbell at Down and Out, who also does awesome, amazing things and is supporting our community in more ways than one.
Don't go yet because I know you have a really big show coming up here in the network too. You're going to be on next week at this time. Who are you talking to?
Next week, actually, right at this time, I'll be talking to the infamous Les Edgerton. And finding out what makes his motor run and finding out about his dark past. If anybody knows about Les, you know his real-life true tales are often more harrowing than his fiction, and I'm looking forward to him spilling his guts about his youth in New Orleans and across the America.
Oh, my God, can you imagine what it's going to be like at BoucherCon? And by the way, just so you know, BoucherCon next year is going to be in St. Pete in my backyard, and St. Pete is a hop, skip, and a jump from Down and Out Books. I don't know if you realize that. So, you know, they're real close by, as is Ocean View Publishing, another great publisher. What's the name of your show, Tom? Tell everybody where to find you.
Skid Row Chatter with Tom Pitts. And if you haven't already been there, it's time to get down on Skid Row.
All right. Go away. All right. We'll talk to you next week. Goodbye.
Hey, thank you, dude. Have a great show. Bye-bye.
Bye, Tom. So there you go. Are you having fun doing this stuff, Steve? Are you having fun with
it? I'm having a blast. You know, like I said, I was in bands for a long time, and after I left that life and tried to figure a few things out, I did find that I missed being part of a community of sort of like-minded, artistically minded people who are sort of pursuing something that's a passion. You know, the chances of making it in music or making it in publishing are pretty slim, but I have met some incredible people, yourself and Tom Pitts included, and so many others that I could name.
Right.
And
it's a great
the
community,
mutual support.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, in the crime and mystery community, I've found is really something that Eric Beatner and I have spoken about at length.
It's
really similar to the rock community in that, you know, in theory, you could be competitive with each other because you're all trying to sell your albums or your books to the same people. But I've never seen a more supportive community of people who are always willing to read a short story before you publish it, give you feedback,
help you
promote a new book, come out to your events. I mean, it's really great. And that's been fantastic. In addition just to being able to publish, which is really, you know, something that I always wanted to do, and I'm so thrilled that I actually have gotten to do it.
Let's talk about Unleaded just for a minute before I let you go, because I know you're on a short schedule, and I don't want to take up a whole lot of your time, but let's talk about Unleaded. Unleaded is a book that was that Eric Beatner conceived. He is the editor for this book. He conceived it because he thought that with the proliferation of gun violence in this country, that he wanted to do a book, an anthology, where crime writers could still tell their story, but without the use of a gun. And that he is actually donating some proceeds from this book to an anti-gun violence group, an organization, a nonprofit. Down and Out sent me the book. I've already read it. It's amazing. Let's talk about your story, your short story in Unleaded.
Yeah, you know, more than anything else, it was a really interesting challenge for me. I'm not a particularly political person. You know, if you're connected with me on Facebook or Twitter, I'm not the guy who's going on a rant about you know, Bernie or Hillary or Trump or anybody. I don't get into flame wars with people on Facebook because I just don't. I've never had my mind changed by anybody yelling at me on social media.
All places, right?
Yeah. So it was an interesting when Eric first mentioned it to me. I had to really give it some thought, and I kind of thought it over. And I mean, I loved his concept for it, but I wanted to make sure that it was right for me and that I was right for it. But then as I heard more about it and kind of understood what the concept really was and that it was going to this really great cause, I just kind of started focusing as a writer on the challenge of, I don't always write about guns in my short stories, but if I can't write about it, what will that look like? And that became really fun for me. So I ended up writing a short story called Itchy Feet, which is, you know, it's about a suburban family. And they're having a yard sale in the midst of their whole life falling apart. And of course, as my stories sometimes do, there's a murderous clown wandering around that may or may not actually exist. So that story is called Itchy Feet. It's kind of funny, kind of dark, kind of surreal.
It is. It's a great story. All the stories are. And just so you know, this book is called Unloaded. You can get it on Amazon. It's published by Down and Out Books, edited by Eric Beatner. Great stuff. It features Joe Lansdale, Hillary Davidson, Reed Farrell Coleman, Joyce Carol Oates, Allison Galen, Grant Jenkins, let's see, Tim O'Mara, Rob Hart, Kelly Stanley, Joe Clifford. Eric Buettner actually has a story in there. Patricia Abbott, who, by the way, is a great voice in noir crime fiction. Let's see, Ryan Sales, Holly West, Jeffrey Hess, Keith Rossin, Tom Pitts, Angel Cologne, Trey Barker, Thomas Pluck. Tom Pluck is really good too. Kent Gowron, Steve, Joe Abramo, and Paul Garth. Really great, great writers telling some really creepy freaking stories, I have to tell you. Some of them wig me right out, but they are really good stories. I think you're going to enjoy it. Steve Loudon, where can we find you on social media?
The easiest place you already mentioned is my blog, which is badcitizencorporation.com, but I am Steve W. Loudon on Facebook, or my author page is S.W. Loudon on Facebook. And on Twitter, I'm at SW Loudon.
All right. And I'll talk to you again soon, because you and I talk a lot, and I like having you on the show.
Oh, Pam, I'm so happy you had me on, and thank you so much. And I hope that you and Alex have a wonderful conversation.
Well, hold on 1 second. Say hello before you leave. And let's my next guest tonight is Alex Segura. Alex, a homeboy from me, born and raised in Miami. He is a novelist and also a comic book writer, which we're going to talk about, too. His new book is called Down the Darkest Street, put out by Polis Books, our friend Jason Pinter. You two know each other. Alex, say hi to Steve. Steve, hi to Alex.
Hey, I'm so glad I got to kind of hang out in the green room for the latter part of the interview.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You were a music guy, too. We should swap band stories at some point.
Well,
Steve's got
it's
some
not,
interesting
it's
stories,
not,
too.
If it's not too much trouble, Pam, I actually would love to. I'm digging into Silent City right now, so I'm getting into your writing. And
cool.
Then maybe you and I can do an interview for my blog.
Why don't you do that?
That'd be great.
You guys have each other's contact information, don't you? Okay, good. Because otherwise I'll hook you up, no problem. Is it okay if I swap phone numbers with you too? I'll do it in a PM.
Sure.
Okay.
Yep.
And then you can go ahead and do that. All right. Steve, thanks again, my friend. And I'm anxious to read Grizzly Season when that's out. Congratulations on Crosswise and on BCC, which I thought was just brilliant. And I love this book too. It's totally different, but I have to say right now my favorite, I've got to go with BCC, okay?
Okay. Well, okay. As long as my book's on that list, I'm fine.
It is on the list. It is. Thanks a lot, Steve. And we'll talk again soon, won't we?
Yes, you too. Have fun.
Thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
Good
Take
night,
care.
Steve. Bye. So, hola, what's going on, baby?
Thank you so much for having me. I'm sorry for my early walk on the stage.
Oh no, that's okay. I was fine. I'm looking. Well, that's a Miami number, and I didn't have your number in front of me. So, let me properly introduce Alex Segura. Is a novelist and comic book writer. He's the author of the Miami crime novels featuring Pete Fernandez from Silent Street and Down the Darkest Street. He's also written a number of comic books, including I love this Archie Meets. And he's doing one, Archie Meets the Ramones. By the way, on Archie Meets the Ramones, I don't know if you know that I had a long interview with Marky Ramone, so it was really interesting, just by.
He's really cool. I was on a panel with him at San Diego Comic-Con, and obviously he's a Ramone, so he's cool, but yeah, that was probably a great conversation.
Well, it was interesting. It was an interesting conversation. He had just put out Blitzkrieg Rock, and of course that's his band and everything. And he was just really an interesting guy. I was glad I got a chance to speak to him. He's a real foodie, which is something that was very surprising to me. He has a line of pasta sauce. I don't know if you knew that or not.
Oh wow! I had no idea.
Yeah. He's an interesting guy. I'll send you the link for the podcast. So welcome officially to Authors on the Air, Alex Segura, who we've been interacting on social media and all, and this is the first time. I think it's the first time you've been on the show, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's an honor. I'm really excited to be here. So.
Oh, please. I'm glad you're here. So you moved from Miami when to go to New York?
I've been in New York for about 10 years. So I moved up here around 2006. Yeah, early 2006.
And did you move because of your writing career, Alex, or did you move because, like me, you lost your mind in Miami?
I think it was a little bit of both. It wasn't the writing career. It was I'd moved up here to sell my journalistic soul and become a publicist. So I started working at DC Comics, overseeing doing publicity for them, and that's kind of what got the writing going. Really, I think being homesick and thinking about Miami, and you know, I think when your hobby becomes your job, and that's kind of what happened with comics, you start looking for other hobbies. So I got really much more into crime fiction and more modern kind of crime novelists. And at a certain point, I was like, well, I'm going to just try and write my own. And that's really where Silent City came in.
I have to tell you that your covers are very Miami-centric. I'm imagining because that's where you have them set, your stories are set. But the neon look on it is very South Beachy, because I used to live on South Beach, as well as Kendall and all those other places. I mean, I lived in Miami Springs, I lived in South Miami, and Kendall, you know, I've been all around there. So,
So these books are probably like a tour of old haunts for you.
You know, born and raised. So, and I have to explain for all of you who have never been in Miami, Miami is an incredibly multicultural city where you can literally drive from one country to the other, depending upon the street you're on. But when you're born there, like 100 years ago, the way I was, Spanish just becomes your second language. It's just a natural thing. You learn, maybe not conversational Spanish, but I'll tell you what, everyone in my family can cuss in Spanish. We can cuss in Haitian. We know if someone says, we're going to calle ocho for whatever's happening, you know what they're talking about. You're going to Little Havana, and everybody knows that. There is no place better than going for Cuban food and then sitting down and drinking beers and all. So Alex understands what I'm talking about. There's not a place in Little Havana that does not have a sign with a neon light on it, and there's not a place on the totally opposite side of the city on South Beach where all the clubs and all the glitterati are and the celebs and the models that doesn't also have neon all over it. So it's a city of contrast.
It's such a big
place.
It's so spread out. Yeah. And I think that's kind of what I wanted to reflect, that it's not just South Beach. You know, it's not just the beaches and the glitz and the glamour. There's all these other corners of Miami, like, you know, you said Little Havana, but even stuff like Fort Lauderdale and the suburbs of Fort Lauderdale, places like, Homestead, Hialeah.
I grew up in Hialeah, so believe it or not.
So
that was, we always say BC before Cubans, because it was such a white bread community. It really was a very white bread neighborhood. You know, we had the same mayor forever. And then after that, we had the same, another white mayor forever. And then all of a sudden, and I was the last of my high school year where we had just a few Cuban kids that were coming because they were becoming of age after the Peter Pan airlift.
Right.
That the kids are now becoming of age to be in high school.
Yeah, my mom was a Peter Pan kid. Mm-hmm.
Was she really? So it was a very natural thing for us to just hear Spanish. And people would say, well, do you understand what they're saying? Oh, yeah, I know, you know. And plus the fact, as you well know, Cubans are there for a long time, don't speak Spanish, they speak Spanglish, right?
Right. Well, yeah, you just get by, kind of merge the two languages, speed it up a bit.
That's right. Yeah, it's a ton of fun. It's a ton of fun. And most of my friends who are Spanish speakers speak half English, half Spanish in their sentences and don't even realize it. So it's a ton of fun, though. It's a good city
to live in. Yeah, it all blends together. Yeah.
It all blends together, right? Doesn't it, Alex? So let's talk books. So you started off doing the comics first, correct?
Right. I mean, my day job was in comics, and so that was kind of my first break, but. Eventually, the novels took over.
I want to talk about, because you still write comics, and that's still a really big part of your life. So let's talk about that and how you started in comics, because you write an Archie comic, and I always thought that comics were copyrighted. So how could you use the characters there? And still call him Archie.
Well, I mean, it's got to be, obviously, Archie Comics, the company, owns the character, so they have to approve you writing the comic book.
Oh,
so, yeah,
okay.
And since I work at Archie, that was it was the kind of thing where I asked, can I write this issue? Or they said, we need somebody to write this, and I kind of threw my hat in the ring. And that's kind of how it happened with Archie Meets Kiss.
Now, is this the traditional Archie that I grew up with, Archie and Jughead and Veronica and Betty, or are these new characters?
No, it's the classic Archie. It's Archie, Betty, Veronica, Jughead, and hanging out at the chocolate shop. It's the same kind of all-American team.
Do you do the drawing, or do you just do the scripting?
Just the script, which is, it looks kind of like a screenplay, and you break it down by the panels, and you, it really depends on which the artist you're working with and how they want to work with you. Some writers just write a couple paragraphs and say, this is the plot, and I'll add the word balloons later. And some scripts are a little more detailed, where you actually like break it down by panel for the artist.
Now, are these comics put in the old-style comic books?
Yeah, I mean, the Archie stuff, you can still find Archie on the newsstand in your grocery store, but you can also find them at comic shops and bookstores and, you know, digitally everywhere, pretty much everywhere.
They're digitally also.
Mm-hmm.
Fascinating to me.
It's a whole new world.
I had no idea. Yeah, it really is. Well, you know, listen, I'm kind of in the last century. What can I tell you? You know, like I said, I'm old as dirt. So we weren't allowed to read comics when we were little. My mom thought that they weren't, you know, wasn't worthy reading material. We could read whatever books we wanted. So one of my three brothers and I were total book freaks. You know, we were kind of geeky that way. But I remember sneaking a look at comics and thinking, oh, my God, my eyes are going to burn. My elbows are going to burn. Yeah, but that's what
you're committing a crime, yeah.
Yeah, but that's what happens when you grow up in a Catholic household and you go to Catholic school. You know, you're not allowed to look at comics. And I have friends that have saved comics from when we were kids like that, and they're probably worth a lot of money. So
yeah, I mean, one of my earliest memories was getting an Archie comic in public, like just in the checkout lane in Miami. And I guess my parents were a little more chill when it came to their Catholicism, so they were okay with their kids looking at comics for a couple hours.
Well, I think we're a generation apart anyway, but, you know, I'm a recovering Catholic now, probably from all that trauma of being under, you know, smacked by the nuns and everything. I don't know.
Oh, wow.
Let's talk books.
Yeah.
So you decided from comics, it was the natural thing for you to do to go and begin writing crime fiction. No? Just you jumped right into it, right?
Yeah,
wow.
I mean, you know, it was one of those things I'd always it wasn't easy. It was one of those things where I'd always loved crime fiction and true crime, and I was talking about this yesterday. We had the launch party for Down the Darkest Street yesterday at the Mysterious Bookshop, which was awesome. But I have very clear memories of like sitting on my bed and reading The Godfather at a very young age and just being like really pulled away by these stories about bad people doing bad things. And so when I got to DC, when I moved to New York and I started working in comics and I started reading more modern kind of crime fiction, you know, stuff like Dennis Lehane and Laura Lippman and Reed Coleman and George Pelicanos, you know, with really kind of flawed protagonists that aren't really perfect, you know, aren't as cool or collected as Marlowe or even Lou Archer.
Sure.
But also with really strong sense of place. You know, like Tess Monahan can't happen anywhere else. It's got to be Baltimore because it's such a big part of the...
It almost becomes a background character in every single story.
Yeah,
location.
Exactly. And you feel like you're there. And
right.
You start... You're almost like you're traveling for free on somebody else's dime, getting a tour of Baltimore and getting a tour of D.C. And I think at the same time I was feeling really homesick. I was in New York, and I think the hardest time for a New Yorker or a new New Yorker is that first year when you're getting kind of reacclimated to a new place. And so I was feeling homesick, and I really wanted to write a book about my hometown, but also write about a character that wasn't a defined PI yet, you know.
Sure.
He was still figuring it out.
So that brings us to Silent City, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about Silent City. Give us the elevator pitch. You can take a long elevator if you want.
All right, yeah. I mean, this could be a 20-floor building. So in Silent City, you meet Pete Fernandez, and by the time you meet him, he's not at his best. He's basically on the brink of being fired. He's moved back to Miami because his father died suddenly. His fiance has ditched him and left him for some. She's left him for somebody else. And he's basically drinking himself into oblivion. He's got one friend left, this guy Mike, who just for whatever reason still keeps helping him out. And while all this is going on, a colleague comes up to him and says, hey, you know, you have this great reputation as a reporter when you used to work in New Jersey. I really need you to help me find my daughter. And this guy's daughter, Kathy Bentley, is also works at the newspaper, the Miami Times, where Pete works. And it really starts unraveling a much bigger mystery that ties into a killer that is kind of a killer of killers. He's the guy that the mob hires to kill other mobsters, but his identity has been a secret for years. And she, Kathy, had been working on the story, and she was kind of on the cusp of figuring out who he was. So Pete, thinking he's just doing this thing on a lark, you know, to kind of distract himself from his miserable life, actually ends up being embroiled in this citywide conspiracy that ties back to Pete's own dad, who was a homicide detective in Miami, and this was kind of his last case, like his white whale, the one case he couldn't solve. And so Pete, you know, in a way is trying to fulfill his dad's legacy, but is also trying to kind of carve out and figure out what he is himself.
Interesting. Did you have fun writing this?
I did. It was, you know, I don't think you can ever recapture that first novel feeling because you're really flying blind. I mean, all you have in terms of references is stuff you've read. I didn't read a lot of how-to books. I just kind of figured, you know, and I don't know if I fall into the outlining or the kind of seat of my pants. I do a little bit of both. So you just find your own method. But it was a lot of fun. You know, you put in little hat tips to places you remember, and it really felt like I was going back home for a little while. And reading it now, sometimes I'll revisit it or flip through a few pages, and, you know, there's a charm to it, I think. There's an energy to it that as we get better or more refined, you kind of lose. You kind of sacrifice it for, you know, a little more polish, but I'll always have, always have a soft spot for it.
How fun. I want to talk a little bit before we go on about Bad Beat that you wrote with Rob Hart. What is Bad Beat? Let's talk about this.
That was fun, and that also kind of spun out of our mutual love for comic books. Rob's a comic fan, and we were just grabbing a bite and talking about comics and different, you know, a big thing in comics is the crossover, you know, Superman and Batman, or this character meets that character, you know, first they fight, then they become friends to team up against the greater enemy. And we just started thinking, you know, this never happens in prose. You never see it. You never really see it as much in mystery fiction. There was an anthology not long ago that kind of pitted different series characters. Like there was I think Michael Connelly and Dennis Lehane co-wrote like a Harry Bosch, Pat Kenzie crossover. And so we mentioned that, and we were both kind of on the cusp of things for our own books. I think Rob was between New York and City of Rose, which came out recently, and I was getting ready to see Jason at Polis reissue Silent City and then release Down the Darkest Street. So we thought, you know, there was a time where Pete was in New Jersey before Silent City, and that's pretty close to New York where Ash is. So we thought, let's write a story. We can have them kind of cross over, but make it a prequel. So it won't really, like, interrupt any of the narrative that we have set up. But it was, you know, it was surprisingly easy. Rob was great to work with. It was one of those things that you go into it with some trepidation. You know, we're friends, so I wasn't too anxious about it. But it's also working with someone is different from hanging out with someone. So,
and your writing styles are very different, though. I mean, let's face it. Your writing styles are very different, even though I think you enjoy a lot of the same authors and you enjoy comic books and so on, but your writing styles are very different.
Yeah, totally. And our protagonists are very different. I mean,
yes.
if you put Ash and Pete in a room, I don't think Pete walks out. But I think Pete has his own charm too. And
he doesn't deserve to though. It's just because
right, exactly. No, exactly. But there's also when you jump back in time, since we were meeting Pete before Silent City, I couldn't really go too crazy. Like I couldn't, you know, Silent City is very much a defining moment for him. So this had to be something that he could reference later as maybe a stepping stone to the character he became. So there were a lot of logistical things we had to jump through, but once we got it down and we brainstormed an outline, we really just split it up. He wrote one section, I wrote another, and then we swapped and edited it. And the end result was pretty, I'm pretty happy with it. I'd love to see it in print in some way or, you know,
I just went and bought it so off Amazon because it sounded so interesting to me because I like both of your writing styles. So I just went ahead and bought it. I'll let you know what I think. Yeah, my pleasure. No, thanks for turning me on to it. Because naturally, Rob Hart didn't.
Did he not mention it?
No. It's not like Rob and I don't talk all the time.
There's a, obviously Rob's character is Ash, but there is a character in Silent City. There's a scene, I won't spoil anything, where Pete interacts with somebody named Ash. And so when the book was being reissued and I knew we were writing this story, I got to weave in, I didn't go all George Lucas on it, but I got to weave in a mention of Bad Beat. So I thought the comic nerd in me thought that was cool just in terms of like creating the greater continuity there.
Oh, I love stuff like that. You know, Robert Crace and Michael Connelly often acknowledge each other's characters in their book.
Yeah, it's very cool. And when you catch it, you feel like you're in on a secret.
You're in on a secret, that's right. You know, you said this was a challenge for you to write this book, but don't you think that if you're not challenging yourself, if it's too easy, I don't know, is there a lesson in that? Should it be easy, or is it great when it's easy? Or should you challenge yourself? I don't know. I don't know. I'm not a writer. Tell me.
No, I think if it's easy, something's wrong. I think
really?
Silent City was really tough to write just because it was the first time, and I was learning as I went, and you know, along with the protagonist kind of stumbling around and figuring it out. But Down the Dark Street, I feel like, was equally challenging because you want to up the ante. I wanted to make it darker. I wanted to make it a little denser. I didn't want it to be as, I don't want to say easy. I didn't want the problems to be fixed easily. I wanted Pete to feel like things are dirty and gray. And, you know, just because you beat the bad guy doesn't mean you solve the problem. And the problems that he has in Silent City don't get fixed at the end. You know, at the end of Silent City, not to spoil anything, but there's maybe a little glimmer of hope. And you think, okay, well, now he's going to ride off into the sunset and all will be well. But by page one of the second book, you know, stuff has got even
That's
worse.
That's not true. Right.
Yeah.
Well, do you notice a difference in your writing style from silent to down? Do you notice any type of a writing difference?
Yeah, I think it's gotten a little more compact in terms of its descriptions. I think it's more, I try to leave a little bit more to the reader. I try not to explain everything.
Just
I think it's something
just
that happens to the person.
Yeah,
I don't have to describe everyone as they walk into the room, what they're wearing or how they're looking or how they're saying things. I think it's a relationship. You're creating a relationship with the reader, and you want the reader to appreciate the room you give them in terms of you're opening the door for the reader to imagine what's going on. So you're really setting the table and hoping that they come in and enjoy a meal with you. You don't want to over-explain it because then they just feel like they're reading a list.
Well, I want to tell you from a reader standpoint, because you know, Alex, you know me, I read a lot of books. I read. I'm going to hit over 400 this year, probably. I like it when an author invites me to be a part of the story so that if I have a connection in the story, if you're not spoon feeding me every little bit of information, you now have given, first of all, you've not dumbed down the story for the reader. That's real important.
Right.
You've made your partner in your book, i.e. your reader, an intelligent partner with you. And so from a reader standpoint, when you tell me just enough to let me go in, and yes, there's the table. We're going to sit down and enjoy a meal, but you're allowing me to choose what I want to eat and what the table's
exactly.
going to look like and what the restaurant. That's really important. I think it writers like yourself who do that will find a much greater appreciation for their work from readers than those who don't, because now I'm invested in your story. I'm invested in it. Now I know Pete, you know, I know him now. And Pete's my bud. I may not be real happy with some of his behaviors, but he's my friend.
Right.
So do you know what I'm saying? So I think that's
totally. I think well, probably the nicest thing anyone could say to a writer is that you earn that twist, or you surprise me, especially in the mystery and crime genre. And I think that's really challenging to do, that earned twist, because I've read so many books where there's a big reveal at the end and you have there's no clue to it. There's no sense that
right.
it's coming. And so
right.
the impact is diminished, or it's wasted.
Right, because all the clues
know,
are off the page. They're on the back lock someplace, and the reader doesn't get to know. They don't get to peel the onion with you, so to speak.
Yeah, because it's such a weird balance to strike. You want to explain
right.
it just enough so the person feels like, oh, I guess I could have figured that out. You know, it's very Sherlock Holmes. Like, you know, the clues are all there. If you were as smart as Sherlock Holmes, you would figure it out. But the issue is you also don't want to over-explain it so they feel like they're just watching a TV show, or they just feel like there's
exactly.
no suspense to it.
Exactly. Very wise of you, very wise of you. What's on your plate next?
The third Pete novel, Dangerous Ends, is coming out next year. And that's, you know, to me, that's going to be an even wider, you know, it's going to zoom out even wider. There's elements of Cuba during Castro. There's time jumps, and it's really, but it all comes back to Pete. It comes back to Miami, and it comes back to him kind of fighting his own past to have a functional present.
Do you think that you will continue to write Pete stories? Is Pete going to be your series character, or will this be a trilogy and you'll try your hand at something else? What is your thinking at this point?
Well, you know, when I first started, when I knew Silent City was ending and I started mapping out the next one, I thought it would be three and that would be it. You just have a nice compact trilogy. But as I was finishing the draft for the third, there were just opportunities for another one. So I'm halfway through the fourth one and I have an idea for a fifth one. But I think at a certain point you kind of push believability, especially with I want Pete to change from book to book. I don't want it to be this
sure.
evergreen character. And so
right.
there's only so many times you can save the city, or there's only so many times you can get shot and not realize, hey, maybe this isn't for me. So I think Pete, as much of a screw-up as he is smart enough to know when to hang it up. But that's a ways away. But I don't see it going indefinitely.
If that's the case, have Pete talk to a reacher and see how that worked out for him, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Because it hasn't seemed to hurt him at all. You know, Jack Reacher's going strong after how many books, right?
Yeah, I'm sure Reacher and Bosch could give him some tips on how to survive
exactly.
like 20 books.
Right, right.
Yeah.
It's true. Well, but for Reacher, more than that, isn't it? More than 20 books? And yeah, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I say
that
with great love for those books. Like, I mean, those are books that I get all the time.
Oh,
but I think
Bosch is my favorite. There's no doubt. Bosch and Crace. I love all you new guys coming up writing too, because
yeah, those early Bosch books were so influential.
Oh my God, so good. And you know, I can go back and tell you all the books that I love so much. But this is a genre that just does it for me. It really does. You know, you're. Character is not the classic noir character, yet you have a little bit of that crime fiction noirish edge to him. I'm not sure if it's like Will Vajero says, it's a lot of it is the setting, because Miami can be a very noirish type of a town, depending upon where the locations that you're using. Do you see elements in your books the way I do?
No, I think you're right. I think Miami is a great noir setting. I think, and we talked about this a little bit before, like you can't have Marlowe without L.A. You can't have
right.
Bosch without L.A. And I don't think Pete would exist without Miami. Even if theoretically he were to move somewhere else, it would always be about coming back to Miami or Miami's
right.
influence on him. And I think everyone has this perception of Miami, and it is accurate. It is a tropical paradise. It's beautiful. The weather's great. But there's a darkness there, too. There's a lot of corruption. There can be crime. There, you know, it's like any major big city. There is dark corners, and there's dangerous stuff that goes on. And I really wanted to show that, not in a heavy-handed way, but in a realistic way. Like, this is the city I remember, and this is where I grew up. And, you know, for every, you know, little daiquiri you're having by the beach, there's a crime-riddled area that doesn't see the beach, you know?
That's right. That's never seen the beach, actually.
Exactly.
There are places that have never been near a beach. And that
to me, it's Miami for the residents and the natives as opposed to, like, a touristy view of Miami.
Right. Absolutely. Will you try something else? Will you do standalones, do you think?
I think so. I use short stories when the opportunities present themselves as a way to kind of work things out in my head as a potential next series or standalone. I think there's so much upside story-wise for a standalone because
sure.
All bets are off. You know, there's no – you don't have to set up a sequel. And then after a certain amount of series books, you kind of think, you know, how is this guy going to survive the next book? And obviously the reader at a certain point says, well, of course he's not going to kill his main character. So you're kind of facing the challenge of keeping it interesting but also doing it within the constraints of the series.
Sure. So a stand-up book or a standalone, you know, standalone book or a novella is not out of the question for you.
Yeah, definitely not. I think, you know, someone like Laura Lippman has really mastered kind of the rhythm of it. Like, she does really great standalones. And then when she comes back to Tess, it's a big event.
By the way, I saw that she blurbed for you. Congratulations. She's a nice lady. I met her.
She's awesome, yeah.
Yeah, last year, I think, we were here at Southwest Book Fest, and I've met her at Thriller Fest and other places, so congratulations. And unfortunately, she wasn't at BoucherCon last year, although she won. She won the Anthony, so I'm sorry that I didn't get to see her then. I know who influenced you because of the authors that you mentioned and the books that you mentioned. What does your family think about your career as a crime novelist?
I think they're intrigued by it. I think they, I know, you know, my mom read it very quickly when I sent her a copy of the book, and they had a surprisingly emotional reaction just because it was it's their city. They're still there. They're kind of experiencing
sure.
Miami live. And there's a lot of little nods to things that I saw growing up, like places or, you know, Pete's house is kind of where my grandfather used to live. You know, if you threw a dart around there, that's kind of the same neighborhood, Westchester, which is very suburban.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Yeah. And I grew up in Kendall, and there's some stuff that happens in Kendall.
Winchester.
So I think.
Winchester. Yeah.
And so I think they got a kick out of it that way. And obviously, going down to Miami for book events and stuff like that, there's a lot of pride there, which I think is awesome. And I'm glad that they're into it.
I'm so glad. I'm so glad that your family is enjoying it, too. Congratulations on your success.
Oh, thanks.
Well, you got to come back when the next book comes out, because I really like this series a lot. And I hope that my listeners are hearing it. Where can we find you on social media, Alex?
You can find me on my website, alexsegura.com, or on Twitter, @Alex_Segura. And I also have a Facebook author page, Alex Segura.
Yeah, you got to go read Alex's stuff. He's a very erudite writer, and I like his style of books. But perhaps it's because I'm, you know, a little bit just a little bit prejudiced about him being a Miamian too. just a tish, you know. So, but his work is real good. Yeah, but the work is great. It's a lot of fun. I'm glad you came on the show. Come back again, and hey. Who do you know from Miami who writes also? Who are you keeping your eye on?
Who am I keeping my eye on in Miami? You know, Brad Meltzer lives down there, and obviously
yeah.
I need to keep my eye on him. He's like a huge,
huge
star.
Paul Levine. There's tons of Miamians that are down. Paul Levine's down there. You know, his.
Well, actually, in terms of Miami, this is an old book, but in terms of Miami noir, probably number one with a bullet for me is Miami Purity by Vicki Hendrix.
Of course.
That such a great dark book. And I think that was early on, before I even put pen to paper on Silent City. I read that, and you kind of, your heart sinks a little bit. You're like, how could I ever write a Miami novel that comes close to this? It's just really almost pitch perfect.
Well, I'm hoping, I keep telling all the noir guys that I want to do a noir at the bar, and I go to Miami every other week anyway, because I have family there, and my best friends are there. So, you just, what do they call it, Sally across the alley? I just go right across the alligator alley, and I'm there. But I'd love to.
Well, I'll be there in May. I'll be there the first week of May. We should set up a noir at the bar.
Well, let's talk about that, okay? We've got each other's phone numbers, so let's talk about that, because I'd like Vicky to be involved, and I think that would be a lot of fun. And and who else? I think I was Greg Barth and I were talking about that too. So let's talk about doing that. That would be a ton of fun, wouldn't it be?
Yeah, there's so many great authors. I think you'd probably have to book it for two nights just to include everyone.
Oh, God, I don't want to do that. I want one night. I want
to
in and out.
On the cream of the crop, yeah.
Yeah, just get the best of the best and we're out of there, because there are some really good writers down there. I'd love to get, Steve Barry and Carl Hyacin and Paul Levine and, some of those people. And Paul knows everybody, and see if James W. Hall is around and Les Standy Ford and, some of the old guys, and then get some of the new guys in, too. It would be a ton of fun.
Oh, yeah, the Thorne books are great, too. Those are great South Florida books. Les's books are awesome.
That's my literary hero you're talking about right there, James W. Hall. I love that man, and he's happy to be a friend of me. I'm very lucky. But, get Don Brems to come over. He's over here in Sarasota, and there's a lot of good people in Florida. We have got a lot of really good writers.
Well,
so
I'll have to let you know the next time I'm down there. I'll be down for the book fair, too.
Oh, well, of course. You have to go to book fair.
Yeah.
I am so glad that you came, Alex. Thank you so much. Please come back again, and, anytime you want
definitely.
To sit in my spot and let me sit back and listen, get whoever you want. Come on and let's have a chat fest, okay?
Thank you, Pam.
I'm so glad you were here. Thank you so much. On Friday, folks, I'm going to be talking to Will Vaharo. You talk about pulp, everything pulp and noir. You're going to love hearing Will. He's probably an expert on the genre. We're going to have so much fun. In the meantime, thank you to my first guest, Steve W. Loudon, and now my homie, Alex Segura, with his great new book. You've got to go out and get this, because Down the Darkest Street is brilliant. And I should say thank you to Jason Pinter and Polis Books, because they picked up the publishing rights on that, and they're great people too, aren't they?
It's been awesome. I can't say enough good things about working for Jason and Polis. It's been a fun ride.
I'm so glad. Thank you for being here. Have a great night.
Take care. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. Thank you for listening, all, and I'll talk to you again soon. And thank you, Mom and Dad.